T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
207 victories, 39 defeats. Good for a winning percentage of 84%. That is the mark of the Golden State Warriors over the last 3 seasons during the regular season. 84%. You have a better chance, poker players, of looking at your hole cards, 9-10 offsuit, and beating pocket aces than you do of beating the Golden State Warriors in the regular season.
Durant has Ennis on him, spins and shoots over him. It's up, no good. Jam home by McAdoo coming from the weak side. Left-hand dribble into a jumper over Ingram. Good and a foul. KD right over the top of the rookie Ingram with 7 seconds. With a right-hand dribble, cross-up, backs up. The three ball on the way, blocked, but it's caught and dunked by McCaw. McCaw caught it right in front of the rim and slammed it down. Durant left-hand dribble. Backs down, Tyler Ennis backs him down, gets fouled, shots up, it's on the rim, rolled it in, continuation, he just threw it up, not even looking at the basket. Curry finds Durant, Durant deep left three on the wing, good for Kevin Durant, standing a few feet away from Lakers head coach Luke Walton. The Golden State Warriors are the first team in NBA history to win at least 67 games in 3 consecutive years. They beat the Los Angeles Lakers 109-94.
Ah, yes. 67 wins for the 3rd consecutive season. It's never been done before. And now we wait. Sunday, 12:30 p.m., right here on 95.7 The Game. Game 1, Portland Trail Blazers at Golden State Warriors. Welcome. Welcome to Jolo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Kendall Graveman is going to join us in 28 minutes. Dontrell Willis is going to join us at 8:05. And Warriors assistant general manager Travis Schlenk on the upcoming series at 8:45. But gentlemen, good morning. We are through the formality of the regular season, Dibs. Bring on the playoffs.
Yeah, and it all starts Sunday. The excitement can build. 16 wins is all you need now to bring home your second championship in 3 years. Last year, 15 wins in the postseason. Great, but not good enough.
Low, last night, Sharks in overtime, game 1 over Edmonton. Matt Cain, the A's, and the Warriors. A clean sweep across the board for the Bay last night.
And the Bay was on fire, man. It was crazy because you're watching the hockey game, you're thinking, okay, Edmonton jumps on them, they're up 2-0, and you're like, man, just control it. And the second half, it was like just watching the Sharks just dominate, more power plays. They were just all over the glass. It was just exciting. And then the Dubs, man, they're just lackadaisical. Just gave them that Sally Good whoop and just took L.A. Lakers behind the woodshed and just slapped them around. They did it lethargically. It was just like no pressure. Played, everyone got to play. It was just, it was an amazing game. And then Kaner, my God, Joe, 6 innings. I mean, he looked like he was just in a trance and just like, just, he was just,
it looked like
guys.
5 years ago.
Yeah.
It looked like 5 years ago. Let me tell you something. You said the Bay Area was on fire last night. Let me tell you who wasn't hot. You're looking at him, your boy, Joe Fortenbaugh. Last night on Twitter, right around 5 o'clock. No, it's not going to make me very popular, but I like the Lakers in the points tonight, and I like the Diamondbacks in the first 5 innings. Shelby Miller over Matt Cain. Yeah, it worked out great. Here's Dibs with your update.
Well, the top story is your Golden State Warriors. They handle business and the regular season with a 109-94 win over the Lakers. KD continued to sharpen up. He had 29 points. Steph Curry, 5 triples. He wound up with 20, and the postseason quest begins Sunday at home against Portland, game 1 of the Western Conference playoffs. Story number 2, the Sharks' quest for the cup is underway. Melker Karlsson played the hero role.
Vlasic rims it around. Pavelski headmans. Here's a chance. Karlsson moving and shoots. He scores! Melker Karlsson in overtime wins it for the Sharks. San Jose 3, Edmonton 2. The Sharks lead 1-0 in the best of 7 series.
Dan Rusinowski on our sister station, K-Fox, Joel Ward, Paul Martin also with goals. Game 2 is tomorrow. Story number 3 is the baseball. Matt Cain, terrific over 5 innings. Giants back in the win column with a 6-2 victory over the Snakes. Kaner allowed 5 hits. He did walk 3 in just 1 earned run. Madison Bumgarner against Colorado tonight. The A's, a game above 500. They beat Kansas City 8-3. Andrew Triggs now 11 1/3, scoreless to start the year. He is 2-0. They're back at it looking for the sweep today. The Dugout Show, 4:15, right here on 95.7. The Game, the update brought to you by East Bay Mini in Pleasanton. Expand your comfort zone in the spacious Mini Countryman today at East Bay Mini in Pleasanton. Visit eastbaymini.com, eastbaymini.com. I'm Dan Dibley on your home for Warrior playoff basketball. It all starts Sunday right here on 95.7 The Game.
Classic scenario in the first round of the NHL playoffs last night. Savvy, wily veterans against the young, inexperienced, but emotional upstarts. 2-0 Edmonton, and then after the first, the Sharks outshoot the Oilers 34-9 on their way to an overtime victory. The savvy, wily veterans struggled down the stretch. Well, they were just waiting for the postseason. We'll have more on that throughout the show. The next hour is going to break down like this. The Warriors now, in about 9 minutes, a big problem that the NBA is facing. 6:30, Kendall Graveman. 6:45, the latest with Marshawn Lynch. And we've got big news that's happening as we speak. Might have to get over to AT&T Park tonight, Dibs, and have a word with Nolan Arenado, first-round draft pick, Team Fortinball. He's in town.
He's off to a slow start.
Might want a little face-to-face time. He's been okay, but might want a little face-to-face time. Just, you know, see how he's feeling. We do that around here from time to time. Just a little face-to-face.
Yeah.
The management wants to come down, make sure he's feeling okay. Is there anything we can do for you? Question. Would you rather have the Saturday game or the Sunday game if you're the Warriors? Because I was anticipating the Saturday game. They get the Sunday game, Easter, 12:30. I get it. Ratings, money, prime spot. Wouldn't you rather have them on Saturday, though, so that when they wrap this thing up against the Blazers, they get the extra rest heading into the next round? Or am I looking too deep into this whole thing?
No, you're not looking too deep. I think the players rather have Saturday game. They're like, shoot, let's play Saturday. Sunday you can relax, be back home, spend time with the family, eat good little Easter dinner and relax a little bit. But now they got to go out and work. And is it a big deal for them? Absolutely not. They're professionals. You know these guys know how to get it done. But, yeah, absolutely, Saturday would be better for them.
Dib, should they have the choice? Should you be able to make the choice? Basically, you can choose whether or not you even want to play these days in the NBA.
Yeah.
Shouldn't the number one overall seed be able to say, we'll take Saturday?
No, the league gives you what they give you for a reason, and the Sunday 12:30 has always been the marquee playoff spot. It's the A1 spot, and this is the schedule you want. Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, and then Monday is the way it goes out. So you'll have 3 days off from last night before your first game, then 2 days off, then you'll have 2 days off again. So you're getting so much rest, and this is what you want for KD still getting back to 100%. You got the Sunday and the Wednesday, and then you won't have to go to Portland until later in the week.
Durant looked fantastic last night.
Oh, boy, did he.
Plus 28 in 27 minutes. He's knocking down threes, 5 of 7. And, of course, after the game, the first thing he comments on are the 2 missed threes, which is what you've got to love from a perfectionist. Concerns going into the Portland series. Health is not an option here. You can't tell me, well, my biggest concern's health. So what would your biggest concern be if it's not health?
Complacency. Just a team that know that they're so good, Joe, and they know that they can dominate. They know that they're a superpower. This is a superpower in the NBA. And every team around the league knows who the Golden State Warriors are and what they can do and the way they go about their business. And there is not a lot of teams in their heart of heart when they do the soul searching saying, we can beat this team in a series. Be honest, they like, would like to, but they know what this team does. And you saw last night, Steph dribble, penetrate a little bit, kick the ball over to KD and let him hit a three. He was like friggin' 5 behind the arch and just draws. You saw him come down again, get him involved. Then Steph said, okay, let me get some. He goes for 20. I mean, when these guys and those three are going, Steph, Clay, and KD offensively, what do you do? You just hope that somebody gets hurt, or that you hope that they're too complacent, and you hope that they've got too big of a head that you that they just mess up. But in a seven-game series, that just won't happen. So that's what the Warriors are relying on, and that's what the rest of the NBA knows, that you might get them a game or two, but just when this team locks in, they're pretty hard to beat.
I said this before the show, and I was double-checking it this morning. For anyone who's ever played poker, Texas Hold'em, if your hold cards are 9-10, right, you have a 9-10 offsuit before the flop, and you're going against the guy who has pocket aces, right, pocket rockets. He's holding pocket aces. You're holding 9-10 off. You have a better chance of beating his hand than you do of beating the Warriors during the regular season over the last 3 years. You have an 80.
Are you serious?
Pocket aces versus 9-10, you have about an 82% chance of winning. The Warriors against the rest of the NBA last 3 years, 84%. 207-39 during the regular season, 114 wins, 9 defeats at home.
Wow.
Over the last 3 years.
114-9?
114-9, Dibs.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty?
You know, the question
is, it's not bad.
What happened in those 9 games? What were you doing? Were you out the night before? I don't know. We'll look into it.
Well, the opening game of the season this year, they got straight motorboated.
It was a motorboat.
Yeah.
It was a motorboat. Seems like a long time ago, though.
It does.
I mean, do you really fear the Spurs at this point? Based on what we saw in that first game, this chemistry might take a while. Rim protection, Spurs. Now it's like, just stay healthy. It's really just a battle against themselves. All right. Great news if you're a basketball fan here. If you are a basketball fan everywhere else, there is a major problem brewing, and it bubbled to the surface last night. We're going to get into that next. It's Joe, Lowe, and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Joe, Lowe, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
September of 2011, I'd lived in Las Vegas for like a month. I had just gotten there. Thankfully, I hadn't gone bankrupt just yet. But I remember I'm on the couch. I think it's a Wednesday or a Thursday. I'm not positive. I know it's during the week. And it's the final day of the Major League Baseball season. And within a window of just a few minutes, it was overwhelming what ended up taking place. You had a scenario where the Tampa Bay Rays came back late, game-winning home run to beat the New York Yankees, while the Orioles beat the Red Sox late, dramatic fashion. The Phillies beat Atlanta, and then at the same time, you had St. Louis beating Houston. All these games were tied together for playoff spots. If you Google the 2011 final day of the MLB regular season, some will consider it one of the great days in baseball history, just because of not only everything that transpired, but in such dramatic fashion, wedged right next to each other within a matter of minutes. It was a real-life red zone channel. They didn't need to just sparse the highlights together. It was all happening at the same time.
And it was so good, Joe, that they've changed the way they've scheduled baseball as a result of that. They now have all these concurrent games on the last day just in case they can get that scenario to happen again.
It was beautiful. It was a beautiful way to end a season. 162 games, how many months of toiling away, all coming down for a few teams to these last few moments. High drama at its finest. A few years before that, when I was still living back on the East Coast, there was a scenario where the Eagles needed like 7 things to break their way in week 17 to get to the playoffs. Raider fans, you probably remember this. You were 13-point underdogs at Tampa Bay. You were playing an early game. The Eagles needed that upset win outright. The Raiders went to Raymond James Stadium and won that game. At the same time, the Texans took down the Bears, and everybody in Eastern PA started getting real excited because those were the two check marks leading into the afternoon game, Philly against Dallas, and then the Eagles needed to handle business. 44-6 over Romo and the Cowboys, went to the playoffs and beat Minnesota, followed that up with a win over the Giants, then lost to Arizona in the NFC Championship. The reason I bring this up is the final week, the final day of the regular season in any sport, is supposed to give us some drama. You can't have all drama because certain things are going to be wrapped up mathematically, but you should have some drama because now we're getting ready to make that transition to the postseason. And the NBA last night was an absolute joke. An absolute joke across the board. Let's start with the Eastern Conference, where you had a 1 seed up for grabs between the Celtics and the Cavaliers. LeBron James doesn't even play. Most recognizable player in the world. He sits, Cavaliers lose, no one cares. Boston, Well, they're winning in with that number one seed. They're playing against the Milwaukee team that sits their most marketable player, as well as three other starters, Boston Cruises. No drama. Three teams, 7, 8, 9. Indiana, Chicago, Miami, all battling for the final two spots. All three win by a combined score of 65 points. Miami beats Washington by 8. The Pacers smash Atlanta by 18. The Bulls beat a loser Brooklyn team that rests 6 players by damn near 40 points.
Not good for basketball.
Not good at all. My friends, not good at all. How big a problem is this? Because the NBA, you got the rest issue this season. You got the players being political this season. You got ratings down 20%. Here come the playoffs. And on the last day of the season, the overwhelming consensus opinion that was on social media, TV, radio, you name it, was that the product was hideous, Dibs.
And yesterday should have been that perfect storm day. You had all three of those games being played concurrently. The three teams, 7, 8, 9, all trying to get in. 2 would make it, 1 wouldn't. That should have been the most built-up, exciting day for the NBA all season long. But because all these teams sat their guys, it lost a lot of its luster. You know, the fact that Miami was able to win over the Wizards but have it not matter because the other teams that needed to show up and beat their opponents, they just straight laid down. It's embarrassing.
I can fix it. This problem can be fixed. And that's the thing, the NBA needs to really look at it and say, when it's that close, you already know 3 days in ahead. You let those bottom feeders teams that wasn't playing for nothing, Brooklyn and other teams, let those two games play. And then you should have had last night, you should have had Chicago and the Bulls, Chicago and the Heat, should have said, okay, we flex these games. We're making these two teams to playing for that A spot. It's a playing game. That way, all you had to do.
Just going to adjust the schedule in the final game and make simple. The teams that needed it play each other and put the bums against each other?
How hard is that?
I love it. I don't see how they could ever do it.
Okay, tell me how is it not feasible? Think about it.
If you're Chicago, for example, and you would have to travel to Indiana, I'd sit there and go, that's not fair. We still won our game against Brooklyn. They're the worst team in the league. We should be able to play Brooklyn 4 times like everybody else in the Eastern Conference.
I would just be like, no, here's the Miami Heat and Chicago was fighting for that last spot. So those two teams, Indy was already ahead. So you say,
well, okay. No, if Indy loses,
both those two teams
and those two win, they get in. There was there were 12 different combinations of what could play. Indiana had the best path in, but they still could have gotten bounced. That's why this could have been high drama.
Yeah.
Except the three opponents didn't give a damn about their games. The three teams that were needed to win all won by a combined 65 points, and here you are. No drama whatsoever. The one seed was up for grabs. LeBron James and the one seed meant nothing. Meant absolutely nothing, man.
That hurts me a little bit less because ultimately one seed, two seed, it really doesn't matter that much. But the one that gets me low is the 7, 8, 9 battle where those teams showed no pride, no sense of let's make this matter. Let's go balls to the wall and try to spoil this for Chicago or Indiana. Instead, they just turtled up. They got their Cancun vacation going early. It's an embarrassment.
They got paid, though. And they all got paid.
Of course they got paid. And I don't know what the commissioner can do about it, really. I don't know if there's anything you can do. It's just embarrassing.
Part of the problem, because you said, you led right into it by saying, you know, the 1-2 seed, I didn't really care about that. That didn't matter as much. And you'd led in the 7, 8, 9. Think about how many times that line's come up this season in the NBA. It didn't really matter 1 versus 2. Well, it didn't really matter second night road back-to-back. I didn't want to play in that Saturday night game. It didn't really matter because it was our 4th game in 6 nights. That keeps coming up for the NBA. There are too many scenarios where it doesn't matter. And they're all starting to add up, and the ratings are tanking. And now here we go to the playoffs. And what I'm worried about is that you are not going to see playoffs called on the level. The NBA is down in the toilet. They've got a dozen problems on their hands in terms of just getting dudes who are under contract to show up and play. And now here come the playoffs where you need a great run here. You need to take care of your advertisers. You need to take care of the networks. And the only way you can do that is if LeBron's in the finals and if the Warriors are in the finals.
You're right, Joe. And hell, you look at the Cavs. They cut a player from missing a plane. So this goes to show you that sometimes when you – and I'm not saying, because I don't want to be making think that all athletes are lazy and don't care. But when you give responsibility to athletes, and sometimes like Jim, I talked about a coach that I had, North Turner, phenomenal, great offensive coordinator, one of the best in the NFL. But put him at the head coach, he's not a leader of men. And so you're seeing now so many of these players getting nights off, playing when they want to play. Okay, let's rest. It's a long season. And you're losing the competitive, you're losing the energy and the drive of these players. And in tough situations, it's okay. I can quit. Trust me, you're not helping these players. You're not helping them be more accountable. You're hurting a brand, a global brand, because of the fact all the numbers and all this stuff says rest and all these different things that you can do in order to preserve your career. But what was good for the goose is good for the gander. You should be able to play these games, and that's what it's been meant for. And if you want to shut it down, then cut the amount of games, give these guys less pay.
More on this at 7 o'clock. The latest with Marshawn Lynch, which is developing as we speak, at 6:45. And Kendall Graveman up next. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
He's 2-0, and he's got a sparkling ERA for your red-hot Oakland Athletics. Kendall Graveman joining Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Kendall, good morning. Thank you for joining us. How you feeling? Great start to the season, not only for you, but for the team as well.
Yeah, for sure. Feeling good, excited. Some pretty good buzz around here with some young guys throwing the baseball well. And then we're scoring some runs. So for sure, the clubhouse feels really good. A lot of guys having fun when they get to the field. And it feels like a big family right now.
Let's start with you individually. You're off to a great start this season. Obviously, it's a marathon, not a sprint. But what I've noticed when I've looked through some of the numbers is that you're throwing that sinker a lot more this season. Last year, around 62%, average velo around 92. You've got that thing up around 94 mile an hour, and you're leaning on it about 88% this year. Has that been a conscious effort to work on that two-seamer more this season?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's been a more conscious effort of putting the baseball, whatever I throw, in a better location. And that's something, the two-seam, the sinker right now, is something I feel really confident in throwing where I want to. So I think that's one reason why we've kind of stuck to it. Another reason is that it's been successful. So we're getting a lot of ground balls, and we're not using a lot of pitches to kind of get deep in the ball game. And for the most part, it's been one of those times where you kind of look back and like, I'm going to have to do something eventually different, but right now this is what we're kind of sticking with.
Is it different for you approaching the season without Sonny Gray there, in that you've kind of had to step up and take on the mantle of ace, for lack of a better way to describe it?
A little bit, but I think it's beneficial for a lot of people. But I think it's also beneficial for Sonny, because when he comes back in about 3 weeks, he's going to step right back in, and it's almost going to be like we're gaining a number one starter in a big trade, you know. And he hasn't pitched, you know. I was talking to him yesterday, and it feels like he hadn't been out there in a while. And to watch his bullpens and to watch his live BPs and things like that, the ball's coming out like it did a few years ago. So for me to see that, that's very a good sign for us. And for the most part, I think Sonny's ready to get back. He's excited. And then it'll take a pressure off of a lot of people. So then you'll have a bunch of guys that you can roll out there. And heck, with Trigg throwing the way he is, and Hahn and the bullpen, the way they're throwing the baseball, I think that'll be a very, very good addition to us once he gets back.
You know, you have an amazing year. I know it's early, like Joe was talking about. But, you know, in the offseason, you know, I was lucky enough to play in NFL for 16 years. But, you know, I do my sprints. I train and get ready for the regular season, or getting ready for training camp. And, you know, it's still different than a game. I get that. But as a pitcher, how much do you simulate a real game in the off season? What's the difference? How do you train far as for that sport, knowing that you have a certain amount of throws in the arm? How fast do you get going in the off season? And how do you keep yourself ready to make that transition right into, you know, spring ball and also into regular season?
Yeah, I think for me, I don't pick up a baseball for 2.5 months. So, with that being said, I can't work on my delivery, really. I can't work on getting people out. I can't work on different pitches. But during those 2.5 months and to start the off season, I can work on my body and getting it stronger. It's something I really take pride in, to come into a season healthy and to stay strong, because as pitchers, if our legs leave us, then you might as well call it a year, because that's the most important thing to have right there is your legs underneath you. So I think I take pride in just kind of getting a good base. And then another thing I did this year was I was able to watch video of opposing hitters during the off season. Like I said, you can't throw every day. You need that rest with your arm, but you can study. So I think that really helped me so far this year, and kind of just to stay in the moment and visualize pitches as I'm watching. And that's one of the biggest things I've kind of changed this off season that I really liked. And for the most part, I think when you get into spring baseball, you want to have a good spring, but that's where you start to pitch. That's where you start to get people out. And that's really what prepares you when you start to pitch is a month of spring.
Oakland A's starting pitcher Kendall Graveman with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. You know, you're only 26 years of age, but on this staff, you're one of the elder statesmen. For the youngsters like Sean Manaea, Jarrell Cotton, who threw a gem the other day, do they look to you for leadership and advice? What's it like being in that role at such a young age?
Yeah, it's a little of a unique kind of role, but, you know, I just try to think about myself when I was in that situation, and how would I want someone who's been in the league a couple of years to come up to me and talk to me, and when something's not going well. And, you know, like the other day, it looked like Jarrell was getting a little tired, and hey, we just had to go up to him, tell him to empty the tank. You got one more inning, you're almost reaching your pitch limit, everybody knows it, go out there and empty the tank and get to the eighth inning and hand it off to the bullpen with a lead. So just little things like that, just to keep reminding them until eventually one day he's just going to have it. He's going to know. And that's going to be special to watch when there doesn't have to be anyone to tell these guys that. And I think the process is really starting to turn around. And then talking to Manaea about, hey, when you get two outs, there was a situation in his first game, two outs, bases loaded, bear down and get that last out. That's the most important at-bat in that game. And just to make really good pitches and to make them start thinking along those lines. But for the most part, you know, we joked the other day, we had an off day and the positional players were going to do their dinner and the relievers were going to do their dinner. And I looked around and I said, guys, we're all on league minimum. I'm not going to be able to take you guys out to dinner. So, but no, it is fun. They joke with us and it's a good time though.
That is an awesome story. How is it? It's a cliche out there that iron sharpens iron. And Chris Davis, when you're up there and you guys are taking some cuts at it, and you're in a game situation at practice, which guy do you hate facing, and who gives you that thing? Okay, where you're at practice, you're like, okay, I can't let this guy get the best of me. Who's one of those guys that talk a little more crap than others?
At the plate, or
at the plate.
When I'm pitching,
yeah.
Man, there's some guys, they don't really, you can just tell that some guys have a little bit about them that's, they'll give you a head nod when they get in the box, but then it's like, hey, you know, I'm going to try to get you. And I think Carlos Gomez is one of those guys. He plays the game the right way. He plays it hard on an opposing team, you know. And then on our team, like you said, you don't want Chris Davis or him to step in a box. He's out to get everybody, and it's very fun to watch when he's in a batter's box and battling a pitcher, because he knows he's going to get three or four at-bats in the game.
Kendall Graveman, Oakland A's starting pitcher with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Kendall, we know you're busy. Best of luck with the rest of the series in this weekend. Keep up the great work, and thank you for your time. Hopefully we can catch up again soon.
Yeah, Joe, Low Dibs, appreciate you guys. Thanks for what you do.
Thank you, Kendall. He's looking good this year.
Yeah, he is.
Sonny's coming back. Jarrell Cotton looking good. You know Manaea's going to get it going very quietly. Oh, and by the way, Triggs last night, six great innings.
Yeah,
six
just
great innings.
Go ahead and don't give up a run at all, by the way. The only guy who's not fitting in is Alcantara, and it looks like he'll be just conveniently taken out once Sonny Gray comes back. So it's rotation, Joe. It's looking very good.
So far, so good. So far, so good for your Oakland A's. For your Oakland Raiders, however, very interesting development with Marshawn Lynch. It's taking place this morning. We're going to have that for you next. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Ed Werder, ESPN on Twitter. Source, Marshawn Lynch has begun NFL reinstatement process, hoping to play for hashtag Raiders or
and this is the kicker, could team with Richard Sherman if the cornerback is traded? Now, we were talking about this 2 weeks ago. Package deal, Sherman and Lynch. But let's begin with element one. It now appears as if Marshawn Lynch is very much interested in coming back. What we were told from the beginning was that if he came back, there was really only one team he wanted to play for. That's the silver and black. But then the Patriot news surfaced. Maybe there are some other teams out there that have piqued his interest. Part one, Lorenzo Neal, followed quickly by part two. Do you see him coming back? Do you see the Raiders landing him?
Yes, one, I absolutely see him coming back. Two, do I see
very exciting. I just have to throw that in there. That's very exciting.
Very exciting.
The NFL is better with Marshawn Lynch.
No question. But the other question is, do you see him playing for the Raiders? It's beginning to look like a question mark, Joe. And that's not good. The Raiders opened up this Pandora's box and said, hey, are you interested in playing? He reached out, and now everyone's this buzz. And now they got to close it. You can't let this guy go play for New England Patriots. You can't let Pittsburgh or any other teams go out there and solicit this guy. You have to maybe, just maybe, that the Raiders are going to have to overpay for Marshawn Lynch because the cat's out of the bag. He can't play for anyone else.
So by becoming the first team linked to him and getting all this started, it put Marshawn Lynch on the radar of every other team in the league. As a result, it drummed up some interest. And now what you're saying is the Raiders are in a position where you can't start this thing and not finish it. You've got to go out. If it requires you to overpay, you have to do so. You have to close the lid on the Marshawn Lynch Tupperware container.
You do. You let him pop up. You let him pop his head up, and now you got to realize this guy, who's Adrian Peterson? Marshawn Lynch is leading on ESPN, all the different things. He's leading over a Hall of Famer, which Marshawn Lynch, no disrespect, but he's not going to be a Hall of Famer. Adrian Peterson is a foregone conclusion, is going to be a Hall of Famer. And he played last year and Marshawn didn't, and he's getting more press. He has stole the thunder. So you have brought more gravity to Marshawn Lynch, who's beast mode. Everyone loves this guy because who he is and his personality, and he's good for the NFL. So you reached out to him. Now you got to finish this thing.
Dibs, do you feel he's playing next year?
Yeah.
And these steps.
And I think he's playing with the Raiders. And I'm a little concerned that they're not going to get much out of him. It'll be nearly 20 months between snaps when he gets back on the field in a meaningful game. His last game was January 17th of 2016. He had six carries in the playoff loss to Carolina. And subsequently, he hasn't done any football running. So I don't think you're going to get a lot out of him. I think on the surface, it's a nice move. The Oakland kid comes home, and as long as you're not relying on him for too much, I think it's a fine signing. Ultimately, I don't think he's going to go anywhere else because I personally don't think he has that much left. He'll be 31 years old in 9 days. And, Lo, we talked about this yesterday. You playing until you're 38, 39. I mean, that's an anomaly. 31 is pretty old for a running back, especially a bruising running back like that.
How hard is that mentally to overcome heading into another training camp?
It's tough, but I think when you have a guy like Marshawn that took a year off, pretty much 2 years off, maybe even three, because you know he wasn't trying as hard that last year, only had 400 and some yards. He was just, you know, really wasn't happy with the situation in Seattle. Didn't lay it on the line. People were questioning, you know, it was hard at that particular time. I think Marshawn Lynch is motivated. I think that he wants to play here. And I'm with Dibs. You're not going to get a lot out of him. If you're looking for 50, you're looking for 20 to 30 carries a game, Joe, you got the wrong guy. He's going to be a guy that can come in and carry it in between 10 to 15 times, and you hope that he can get you 50, 70 yards a game every once in a while, pop you 100. But if you get anywhere from 50 to 70 yards, 75 yards a game out of that guy, you're fine because you have Rashard and you have Jennings that can go out there and be that fine, comparable back out of the backfield and do other things. So you need that bell cow, and Marshawn Lynch, you know what he's going to do. He's going to run physical in between the tackles, and you have, by the way, you have arguably one of the best lines in football. So he will have some success time training camp, time the season roll around, because he can get his sea legs underneath him.
Jumping full on into hoops in about 8 minutes at 7 o'clock, the D-Train Dontrell Willis will join us today at 8:05. Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. I think everything's done here. I think it's all done. I think it's now just a matter of the administrative process. Just a guess. But as I read between the lines and have followed this story for weeks, I think there was interest between the two parties. Lynch coming back number one, the Raiders in acquiring to fill Latavius Murray's spot number two.
But there are hurdles that needed to be cleared. Number one, his contractual situation in Seattle. Number two, filing for reinstatement. Number three, signing a deal with the Raiders. I think when the New England stuff popped up a few days ago, that was his representation making their final play to get a few more bucks out of the Raiders. That's what I think is happening. So what I believe with all these behind-the-scenes meetings, because we know Lynch got together with Jack Del Rio, which means he's met with the organization at least once. We know the agent's been talking to the team. We know that Lynch has also met with John Schneider and Pete Carroll in Seattle. As soon as his reinstatement papers go through, Seattle will immediately be nailed with a $9 million cap hit for his salary. There is no way with the draft coming up, potential trades, free agents still out there, that Seattle's going to be in a position where they can carry that $9 million for a while. So my thought process is that all the red tape and all the details have been flushed out behind the scenes. And again, it's just a guess. But he's going to file the paperwork. Seattle's immediately going to get nailed with the cap hit. Right after that, they're either going to release him or there's going to be some minor trade to get him in Oakland. And then right after that, you're going to hear the details of a salary involving Marshawn Lynch signing with the Oakland Raiders. That is how I see it as of this morning at 6:54 a.m.
And you see this all going down before the draft.
Yeah, to
kind of clear the decks. So in the next few weeks, clear the decks, get everything buttoned up so that Marshawn Lynch can become a Raider. Now, would Seattle...
You have to, because if you want him and it's not done, if you're the Raiders, I'm looking at him and then I'm thinking, all right, 24, Dalvin Cook sitting out there from Florida State. This is a deep running back class. At some point, if Lynch doesn't get that deal done, once all these running backs come out and fill voids, Lynch's stock plummets, again, because of age and wear and tear.
Now, if that happens as you are predicting that it will happen, is Seattle still on the hook for that $9 million cap hit, or by releasing him, are they freed from that?
No, they'll end up being cool. Everything will be fine. This is all getting worked out behind the scenes. You would think there'd be some sort of trade in the works, maybe like a seventh rounder, or maybe what they do. And you've seen this before, like the Eagles just did this with a team, Baltimore, when they traded for Timmy Jernigan last week. You trade the player, and then like you flip picks in the sixth round. So a team's moving up like eight spots. Maybe they do something like that. Marshawn Lynch traded to the Oakland Raiders. In exchange, Raiders and Seahawks swap fifth round picks, right? How far can they be? They were both playoff teams. So it's only going to be a handful of spots. You do something like that to justify the trade, and then Lynch agrees to a new restructured deal with the Oakland Raiders. The question then leads into what happens with Richard Sherman. Because, Lo, you believe, if you had the wager right now, is Richard Sherman a Seahawk next year?
No, he's not. It's too much water on the bridge. You got to realize it's not water on the bridge. Rather,
it's all dried up under that bridge. There's no water flowing under that bridge.
It is very dry. And you heard the ownership say, hey, they want to move him. Richard Sherman said, hey, it's a part of business. I'm okay with it. I get it. This is how the league works. And he's fine with that. You can't bring him back. You're going to bring a guy in that you're trying to shop. You're listening to people. You talk about he's going to be traded. And you're listening, taking offers. Teams are inquiring about a guy. Now you want to tell me you want to bring him back? People are going to look at when you try to bring him back. Oh, you try to trade me, huh? That's Richard Sherman. I just think that these both sides are going to go in a new direction. So if they can't trade him, I think they cut bait and just release him.
Plus, if you have it out there, and they've made it clear, both Carroll and Schneider said, yes, we are fielding calls on Richard Sherman. If you don't get something done and he's back, the message that sends to the rest of the roster, Sherman's in control.
Absolutely.
Sherman's the one running the show here, and then you start to have a real divide. And Pete Carroll has done an excellent job with that franchise, but you do not want to see that thing come spiraling off its axis this quickly. There's still a small window for you to win another Super Bowl. Still a small one, but it's closing quick. It closes quicker in the NFL than anywhere else.
You just don't want a player, Dibs, to undermine your coaching staff. And Richard Sherman, he might not feel he's doing that, but when you have a guy saying, hey, go into the offensive coordinator and saying, no, you do this, you run the ball, and they didn't. You broke. And he's not even an offensive player. Now, it's different if a running back, the quarterback tells the offensive coordinator, hey, listen, they're playing an over defense. Look, let's run away from the bubble. Let's run to the bubble side. Let's double team here. This is what I'm thinking. And it's a thought process that go in it. I used to go to my offensive coordinator, Cam Cameron, and say, hey, this is what I'm seeing out there, coach. I think we can do this. Here's why. And then coach will look at
What were you seeing? Were you seeing a lot of action for the fullback? So I was, hey, Cam, I see a lot of opportunity here if you know. The Rock.
You know that. you know what? I even would go, because especially when you see an over defense, I'd say, hey, look, I think that we could do this. And most of the times it would work. We called a play. LT went 70 yards on it, the first play of the game, gut scissors, because we've seen the way that they're flowing. So when Richard Sherman undermines the coaching staff and then he does it publicly and tells what he did, I'm telling you, head coaches, offensive coordinators, then you could check out of defenses. They hate that, Joe. They absolutely hate it.
The postseason starts Sunday. Sunday. Finally, the NBA playoffs have arrived, and Damian Lillard, Oakland's own, is predicting the Blazers in six. We're going to get into that next. We're gone for a minute, and then we're right back into the action. Don't go anywhere. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.